You're listening to I Wish I Knew That About Songwriting, the internet's nerdiest songwriting podcast.
Welcome to the second installment of Emily's Help Desk, backed by very, very popular demand. Every person that I spoke to heard the episode, including some clients. She went, wasn't she great? Who the hell was that? I was like, you know, it's what it is. So welcome, Emily. How are you doing?
I'm doing well this morning. How's everything over there?
It's good. And I'm just wondering how it feels to know that you're going to take over this podcast from me by popular demand.
So excited. We're going to make a lot of big changes and it's going to be great. No,
a military
coup. I can't
tell
if you're kidding or not.
No, it's going to happen.
Yeah,
doesn't matter what
exactly.
I think. People that listen, they're going to just kind of, I'm going to try and log in. Won't happen. And I'll just realize you're everywhere now. But that's what it's meant to be. It's meant to be.
Well, here we go. About to find out.
So we're going to go, unless you had any, like, because I want to leave these quite open for you, but people absolutely loved hearing your thoughts on their songs. So is there anything you want to jump on before we listen to these three tunes from the people?
I want to jump into these tunes. These are great. We had a lot of variety today, which I appreciate.
Yeah, I want to say thank you again, because we did the last one, loved it, and it took us a good little while to get enough songs and questions to do Emily's Help Desk. And then pretty much straight away, we had three more and it was just as though everything was aligning. So we're going to do shout outs and love and encouragement and some feedback for people. So give her the first tune if you want.
All right. The first tune you're listening to, Jack Black by Anderson Powers.
Tell me rock and roll. I bought a couple magic beans. It only cost my soul. Climb fast. Now I'm never looking back. Strike back before the empire does appear. There's no allowance here to kill our buns. I'm so high. My dreams are never coming down.
was Jack Black by Anderson Powers.
That great. Sounds like a voiceover. That's perfect. You carry on.
Wonderful. That's what I'm going for. This song, first of all, is very refreshing to hear something that's a little bit more rock without too much of an electronic lean. I feel like that's becoming more and more rare stylistically. Perhaps this is the time for rock to make a comeback. It really reminds me of like the 2000 Strokes vibe, which I appreciate. I really liked how strong your intro was, man. That lick really stuck with me. And if you were listening last week, we talked quite a bit about just like making sure that the song progresses in a way that gets increasingly interesting and that you save some of your best tricks for last. And I really think that you pulled that off well with this. I really like how we're waiting to bring out some of those high harmonies and really show off that you have that kind of falsetto range in your singing. The other thing, that's how you do a bridge. Your strongest songwriting is in your bridge. And I appreciate also that you had a little bit of a breakdown too, so we could really hear those lyrics shine. Even though it almost doesn't matter what you say in this song because the timbre of your voice is so cool and the melody is so cool that I would just go along with it, even if you were probably saying gibberish. It's really interesting to listen to. One thing that I've heard before touched upon on the podcast that I really liked with this track and a few tracks this week was the melodic contrasting. Like I said before, waiting for some of those notes that are more in your falsetto range to come out when you get to that chorus, that lovely chorus. And then again, like, right when I felt like I wanted to hear rhythmic variation, it happened. It was exactly appropriate to start to bring out that new beat after your bridge so that I just keep listening. And it's a 4-minute song, which isn't exactly the current radio standard, but I like it for that. I like the fact that you're not afraid to give us a little bit more length to just give us a little bit more to listen to because of the fact that I don't get bored. Like, I felt like it was genuinely transporting to listen to that song. Like, I wasn't even thinking about how much time it was taking to listen to it. Do you know what I mean? It's really, really well done. The production, the arrangement, all around. Keep up the good work, man.
Awesome. I mean, you hit on so many things that I had in my mind. And like I said, the harmonies, but not just harmonies kind of in the chorus. That was what was interesting, is you hear them early on, they kind of just jump out of, I think it was the verse, or jump out of the first kind of couple of sections. And even if we look at what's called like the theme, if you want to look at the theme lyrically, first of all, so Jack Black, and again, the Star Wars lyric was really funny, like strike back before the Empire does. And these things like that, like Emily was saying, hearing a bit of rock, kind of a punky rock, almost school of rock, which is kind of what it's leaning toward. That's nice. It's refreshing because we hear so much of the same thing in the same production styles and the same tone. The trading space was great, meaning when he'll go from kind of a hook to rhythm going with it, and then a harmony, and then kind of out of that with the kind of guitar licks as well, like you were talking about, Emily, to that kind of nailing the hook. I think the melody was brilliant and it had the title in it. So he's nailing the nut, then straight onto those rhythmic stabs and the prosody, meaning the unity, meaning all at once of those stabs coming rhythmically, made it really interesting. And I think you've already said it, but it's worth saying again, the bridge was a real standout for me in terms of not being afraid of that showmanship and just kind of going and peace and low and listen to me. And then ending it with, you know, going to a school with nothing more important than just learning how to listen or follow your heart. I can't remember the exact lyric, but there's a lot to love there. And I think it all starts with that catchy rhythm. And like you said, beautifully said in terms of it being different. So really cool. And I had a really nice email from the man, and it's just wonderful to hear from people. And I promised that I would shout out the name of his recordings, because Mutant Music Studios, that's Anderson Powers, Mutant, like Mutant Ninja Turtles, Music Studios. So it's really cool to hear from people that are doing this every day, and we really appreciate sending it in. And like Emily said, it's a journey. It's really funny, and it's supposed to be funny. That's the unity as well. So straight out of the gate, bit of rock tunes. I'm loving it.
All right. Up next, we have a little bit more genre variety with Dylan Martinson, Wouldn't Be Enough.
I'm sorry if this is forward. I don't mean to come on strong, but you're all I ever think about, and that's why I wrote this song. I haven't left my state in over a year. Now I know my mistake was always waiting right here. Was always waiting right here. But now you're living Colorado high without me by your side. I saw you, and I instantly knew you're all I ever wanted, and I wish this dream could come true. I wish this dream could come true. But now you're living Colorado high without me by your side.
Was Wouldn't Be Enough by Dylan Martinson. I could just talk about how much I like your voice again, because that was one thing that stood out so much. You have, once again, just a really strong sense of prosody with your tone of voice, your timbre of voice, matching this longing sort of songwriting. But then something that I noticed that you did that I haven't heard from you before is that little bit of having a spoken ad lib and having your laugh in there. I love that. That was one of my favorite details. And one thing that I want people to start thinking about more with their singing is it's not always about being hyper melodic. Sometimes it's about acting on pitch, if you know what I mean. So almost like you would approach a rap song, but just like for a particular ad lib. If you want to hear examples of how this is done in more singer-songwriter music, I think Bob Dylan is a terrific example for just being able to say things that sound like they are almost on pitch, but not quite. And it's just more of like he's acting out the emotion that he wants you to associate with the song more so than he's trying to craft a melody around it. I thought that was really good. I want to see people continuing to push that. It's interesting. The other thing that I love about it is this is a simple track, even for what I've heard from you, which is a lot of stuff that's more guitar driven. I like the fact that there's not a ton of production because of the fact that it really shows the strength of your songwriting. I think that some of the best songs, you can take away all of the arrangement, all of the production. You can have a voice and a single instrument to accompany it, and it'll still be amazing. It'll still be evocative and move people. I think that's really important, especially nowadays when everything is produced in the computer. So many people are using a lot of software, and that's a great place to start making a demo, but you can also run into issues where the songcraft gets lost if you're writing with production. Do you know what I mean? So I really like the fact that you can pull off this track with really, really minimal production. And once again, it's just like super interesting to hear that good melodic contrasting too. Like there's a few moments in there where it's just like, oh man, that is what's keeping me listening. It's just like a little bit of melodic variance I thought was really well done. Really well done once again.
It's just Dylan, isn't it? I mean, I had a chance to speak to him as well, and just the kind of person that you speak to and you realize how much energy and passion they have for songwriting. And it's somewhat humbling to see that in the flesh of how much he puts into his music. But this song for me, like Emily said, I think he said beautifully about the simplicity of the production. That comes up a lot, you know, four elements. It's kind of all we need, otherwise it can get complicated. But even the guitar intro, it was really delicate and melodic. If you were to be able to, I think most guitarists could probably tell me what chords they might be or the shape and structure. But when I heard them, and I've heard so many songs in that genre, that style of country, but I was drawn in. I have to say it was really unique and delicate, and it had a, like Emily said, a longing melody just to the intro. So that is huge, huge amounts of props to just be able to do that with your guitar intro, which is cool. And maybe Emily and I have a bit of bias because we know Dylan's like great and we're like, oh, what's he going to say next? But I was surprised at how short that first melodic phrase was and the gap that you had. It was really cool. It was kind of a big intro, then quite cluttered and forceful in terms of how many lyrics and melodies you're throwing at us. But then there was a gap. And I noticed a kind of 80s hair metal-y, like Steven Tyler approach to your melody. And then the chords kind of followed that. So I don't know whether that was something deliberate, but it was really cool. And just simplicity to that, and has to be said again, but vocals. Emily and I are probably going to zone in on those technical aspects so that it can be shared. But Dylan, when you have a voice like that, it's like a Ferrari. There's only so much you can do on normal roads. So when you give yourself a song like this, that's kind of like taking it to the racetrack where you've got so many colors and shades. I wrote down that kind of 4D sing element, which I believe, get this wrong, but it's lyric, melody, rhythm, and tone kind of is that fourth one, which you have in spades. And I'd say keep developing it because it's really cool. But the fifth one is that 5D singer, which is called intention, whereby like Emily's saying, you've got that sales pitch kind of vibe almost that you're, Emily Warren talks about it beautifully. It's like, she said herself, she works with so many massive artists and singers, and in a certain genre, they want her sound. But she goes, well, there's only so many things I can say in pop music and melodies that I can write. But what I can do is just record it in a really interesting and strange way. And often that's how she'll get her top lines sold or her. I mean, she's incredible. She's kind of like, you know, give her anything we get from this show. She kind of owed it. Something like similar to Max Martin and Ryan Tedder. They just, so much of this show is built on people like that. But yeah, and the chorus is huge, Dylan. In fact, the pre was the biggest thing, because choruses I came to expect to be huge, but the pre was kind of that halfway up Everest thing, that mountain, that lift. I was like, damn. And then you open up your voice against the chords, and it's just, and buzzwords as well, you know, like she's in Colorado, and it's, I think locations can be beautiful buzzwords. Shout out Denver.
I'm a little biased. I liked that part.
But it hits you, right? You're a woman in Colorado. You just go, yeah, cool. And it's got that longing as well, that sense of distance just from that. And I think we've said it so many times that I don't know if it comes through, but just the voice on that chorus. And I don't mean you have to be, yeah, go.
And I think that you really double down on the fact that you have such an amazing timbre and emotional quality in your voice by having such a sparse arrangement. Like I talked about how it's really, it's a mark of a strongly written song if you have only guitar accompaniment. But in addition to that, there's power in being able to make something sound sadder when it's more sparse. So you double down on the prosody again by only having basically one instrument and really selective guitar takes. I really, really like how you brought that emotionality because of that. Like, if you really only have one instrument going, it's going to feel lonely. Super interesting.
So, such a great way of bringing that out, scoping that out in terms of the prosody, the unity of it, because it's a sad, longing song with a single guitar and a vocal. But I thought it was a great use of delay as well to not only remind you of the hook, but kind of bring back the nut. Wouldn't be enough. And that kind of comes back on this kind of like harder delay, which is cool. But like Emily's saying, it sounds like you've kind of clattered in at 1 a.m. and just gone like, fuck it, I'm Chris Stapleton. And you just play a song and it's really sad and it's beautifully done the first time. So I know there's work that he's doing on his production and there's work that's gone into this one, clearly, even to appear so simple. But delay was great. The second pre, I want to bring up what Emily said again. And I just want to back up what she's saying, not because it is partly like, oh, I thought of that, I'm going to say it. But when Emily's just nailing the things that are really important for you guys as listeners, I want to reiterate that adding in those other dimensions, if we want to add that sixth dimension, is after presence. You go, well, ad-libs, spoken word. I talk about when I worked with year five, which is like 6-7-year-old kids, showing them the different types of delivery. You know, like Sam Hunt, I think, is one of the best examples of how you mix that. And I think Bob Dylan's great. I would have even said anything that comes from kind of Southern blues, which is also Sam Hunt, through Atlanta, through blues music, through the Wheel of Time, through country music. But there's so many great artists that do that. It's kind of a little mumble or a little laugh, or someone else did it on a track recently. I just want to high five people that have the guts to do that. And Dylan's got a great example, and it's that second pre, that second verse curse. How do I do something a touch different? Well, I'll laugh and I'll go for it. And, you know, if anything, maybe a kind of not a laugh, but something also sad could have been cool, because that's what Emily's kind of honing into with the unity. But I feel like I have missed a few things. But in my mind, if you just map the journey from that intro had me, the verse then took me away to an 80s thing, the pre slapped me in the face, and the chorus gave me what I was looking for. And he also had the Nashville payoff folded into that by way of him talking about setting up that sadness, giving specific things in the pre-chorus, and then the chorus pays off exactly what he's been talking about. You know, close off my back, roof of my head, and it still wouldn't be enough. Wouldn't be enough. Slap back, wouldn't be enough. So, yeah, I feel like just nailed the nut. Ralph Murphy would be very, very pleased that people like Dylan are writing songs long after he's gone. What a wonderful man. Is there anything else on this tune apart from the fact that, again, it'll be you and Dylan running this show in about 2 weeks?
I know, exactly. This is just, like you said, I feel like this is just such a tried and true power ballad, and it really works in that kind of wheelhouse. There's something about it that is very quintessentially 80s and timeless at the same time. And I really, really enjoyed listening to it. There's a lot of details, little granules in there that I thought were super interesting. Keep up the good work. I would love to hear you continue to write in this style.
Yeah, that's it. And it was a departure from the classic country. And when you have such a beautiful voice and texture as you have, Dylan, you could probably get stuck, because I know Dylan does covers of kind of country songs, popular country songs, as well as his own. But I love the fact he's kind of going, well, how do I do something different? Hybridization, talked about Sam Hunt today, people that take two styles and put them together to make it their own. Dylan, you might well be on track to finding something like that with your kind of rough and ready 80s pop country. But the subtlety there is that they're not things that would never work together or would be too strange. They kind of bleed into each other, and I've not heard songs like that. And maybe you're onto something. Well, definitely you are, because we love it and we do our best to just encourage people regardless. But we've taken a lot of time on your song today, not to the exclusion of anyone else, but I just think supporting people that are really going for it, and I know that he is. So look forward to next month's song, man. Send it in.
Please do. Up next is Your Memory Makes Me Cry by Stu Neal.
If I could talk to you now, would I know what to say? Or would I hide it all and turn myself away? We could be telling stories or simply passing time, or you could help me with the troubles on my mind. And if I turn the clock just so we could talk, you know I would try. But how can I say anything when your memory makes me cry? If I could talk to you now, who knows just how I'd be? With so much left unsaid that's stuck inside of me, I found a new horizon after a perfect storm. I found that heartaches aren't enough to keep you warm. And if I turned the clock just so we could talk, you know I would try. But how can I say anything when your memory makes me cry? I could drift for ages, slowly turning through the pages of the stories written in our dreams. Then I get the notion of just going through the motions when life's not what it seems. Could last forever, and I know that I might never feel that gentle peace again. But as it goes on longer, I can feel it make me stronger. There's nothing left to pretend. If I could talk to you now, I know just what I'd say. I thank you for the love that set me on my way. I hope I made you happy. I hope you're proud of me. I hope I turn into the one you thought I'd be. But if I turn the clock just so we could talk, you know I would try. But how can I say anything when? How can I say anything when your memory makes me cry?
That was Your Memory Makes Me Cry by Stu Neal. One thing right off the bat, I am a sucker for all of these like little Beatlesque sonic references that you have. I love that it sounds like Paul McCartney recorded most of the instruments. And there's a lot of things that really work for me within this. So let's talk about it. First of all, I really love your Mellotron part that starts at the very intro and then continues to go underneath the vocal. I think that's really strong. And it makes me think of a concept that I want more people to start thinking about, which is something called an underlick. The idea of the underlick is that this is a particular melodic phrase that works really well in an intro, but it's simple enough that it can continue once your lead vocal kicks in. So it can be more of a hooky, like intro riff melody and a supporting melody for the vocals. You can think of, there's a lot of different examples in popular music where you can find this concept, but I thought you did this particularly well, where you keep your intro going and you keep that instrumentation and you keep roughly the same lick going even while your vocal is introduced into the instrumentation. I thought that was really strong. One of my favorite examples for the underlick, listen to the song Friday, I'm in Love by The Cure, where he has that kind of jangly, chorusy intro bit, but then it fits perfectly underneath the vocal. You don't have to change a thing with the guitar part once you get into that first verse, which I think is something kind of challenging to do. But when people pull it off, it really adds to how memorable your melodies are and how catchy your entire song is, not just your chorus. A lot of people think about the chorus as having to be the catchy part, but I think kind of like some of the artists you were mentioning a moment ago, like Ryan Tedder or Max Martin, these artists have mastered how to make every single section hooky. And I think you do that really well. Like I really enjoyed how interesting the chord progression was. You give us a lot of variety of chords for a pop song. But then in addition to that, you give us a melody really works with that variety. Like there's good dynamism in not just the melody, but also in the chords that are supporting that melody, which keeps me listening. It keeps it super interesting. In terms of the things that stood out to me the most, yeah, the fact that you have that Mellotron part that works throughout the entire song, like I was talking about before. And then in addition to that, you have that great melodic contrasting. And one of my favorite things to do is start with a good chorus. If you have a really strong chorus, just start with the chorus, definitely. And then have more supporting details you introduce and reveal more about the chorus in that first verse. Like I said, really interesting arrangement. I'm loving all of these little layers you have here that just are so tried and true to that Beatlesque style of production.
That is where I want to jump off as well, is the last kind of note I had was very clearly the Beatles feel. I don't know how else to say it. And as someone who didn't grow up with that music directly, we all did in terms of influence because they created pop music in that sense. But I think Stu's done an incredible job of assimilating everything that was around him when he was formulating his sense of songwriting. That's what it is. It'd be easy for us to say, oh, that's not the same as what I'm listening to right now or what's popular. But I think the quality of songwriting is really, really appropriate to where he learned it from. Emily and I would have learned it from, I'd say, like pop country fusion artists that then go into that kind of, it's kind of your Taylor Swifts, or mine would be the Sam Hunts or the Max Martins. And that's an era too. You can listen to Max Martin's first half of his career, completely different from what he's doing now. But what Stu did really beautifully was emulate those in the best way. The bridge stood out to me as a really, really strong element and a really tasteful solo. Again, to do something that literally changed the world and changed the world of music, that being the Beatles and McCartney and Lennon, to do that in a way that's interesting and not expected, I think is worth noting amongst what we normally talk about on this show, which is probably more, you know, like commercial up there pop music. But the fact that someone like Stu is not only a listener, but someone that takes inspiration from this, because he'll kind of shares his journey and how he's listening to the show, but his kind of rediscovery, or in essence, we're hearing a guy who's actually 15. From what I'm saying, from what I'm guessing, he's a touch older than that, with his influences, but it's really nice to hear. And the one thing I would say is just really have faith in your rhythms in terms of that first bit part that we hear, your first vocal, dig in on that rhythm. I spoke to someone today about it, that even to have a nice wandering stylistic in this case, melody is good, but anchor some of it on a really strong part of your rhythm just to make sure that you don't lose people. Like the times on this podcast where I've rambled or cut half a word or slurred or said too much, that would have affected your attention listening to it. So it's no different with a song if you can. And you have a chance to do it again with your song. So beautiful stuff and great rhythm progression. I thought bringing in that percussion on that, I would say, you know, second verse is how I heard it. Maybe I heard the structure wrong, but when the percussion comes in, it was really well done. It's very needed. I think it was a very empathetic way of doing a structure, because I was kind of thinking, oh, are we missing those key four elements at the start? And then you bring in that beat and it does have a really big impact. So Nailing the Nut as well, very traditional. But it just goes to show these songwriting tenets, these kind of 10 commandments of how Ralph Murphy picked up all of the things that he imparted before he passed away. They mean a lot still to songwriting, setting up your lyrics, having progression, having interesting parts, paying off the nut lyrically. So Stu, yeah, awesome job in that sense. And well done for actually standing out and sending us something that was a touch different. I think everyone did that today, unless I'm mistaken.
Yeah, good variety. I don't think we had a single song that was the same genre this time, which is cool. I wanted to circle back on something that you said, though, when you're talking about honing in and really digging in on rhythmic aspects of the melody versus having something more meandering in terms of pitch. I think that I like melodies that are kind of meandering in pitch, and this is a matter of personal taste. It's something very subjective, right? But at the same time, one thing that I've learned from just observing the Beatles and also watching documentary films on them, one thing that's really characteristic of their music is the melodies are kept relatively simple. And one aspect of that is the times. It's because of the fact that, well, nowadays we have our smartphones in our pockets. It's very easy to have an idea and instantaneously have a record of it that you can access easily. Whereas back in the times when the Beatles were first recording, the smallest tape machines still were too big to fit in your home. So you had to write melodies that were more memorable for the sake of your own memorization.
Bang. Can we just get that? Can we get like the glass breaking, shattering? I studied music tech. I've listened to music for my whole life, and I've never thought about the fact that, if I'm right, you said you literally have to hold on to your ideas until the next morning, and they have to be hooky. Otherwise, you won't remember them and then record them.
That is something that Sir Paul said himself. If you haven't seen the documentary series McCartney 321, stop what you're doing and go watch McCartney 321. It's amazing. It's an interview one-on-one with Paul McCartney being interviewed by Rick Rubin. And the way that it's shot is really interesting, too. It's all in black and white, and it's a really dimly lit room. So the only things that are well lit are Rick, Paul, and the mixing console. And they're just going nuts, isolating different Beatles and Paul McCartney wing stems and playing back different like submixes from iconic songs and telling different stories that aren't popularly told about very popular tunes. It's amazing. I think it's really telling in terms of how simplistic the Beatles songwriting actually is. Even in some of their songs that seem more melodically complex, they really start with very, very simple kind of chord progressions, maybe one or two chords. I think a good example would be Eleanor Rigby, where a lot of the song is only two chords, but then there's this layering effect that happens, right? Once you get George Martin in there, and you start to get like all of the iconic orchestral string sounds that you still hear in productions nowadays, people trying to emulate. But it's a matter of starting with that moment of simplicity when it comes to the melody and the chords. Watch that, have a music lesson, get inspired, and keep making amazing songs.
Talking to me there, I'm learning as I sit here. It's such a nice way of thinking about it. And I think it's really clear that as we grow this show, as we move forward and we find more people to listen to it, everyone can learn from everyone. Every genre can learn from every other genre. And I think we're not in a world anymore where we need that simplicity of melodies, but we are moving that way. And again, the same person I was talking to today about having really strong rhythms in her choices for pop, there's also someone I had to push to write a really simple chorus because, like you said, everything is very complicated and connected, and it's anxious people like us who are sort of struggling with other compulsions. We find it hard to sit and do something over and over and over, but really rich. And I want to go back to the first tune we had. I think something about Jack Black and that levity and lightness in life and throwing in kind of funny lyrics deliberately, but being at a level of your songwriting, you can do that comfortably, I think is worth noting as well. And he also paid real attention to rhythm and arrangement and those kind of four key aspects. And Dylan's becoming the kind of the star of the show, but for good reason, because as Emily broke down beautifully, there are very clear things. And when you sing like that, one thing I wanted to add is his guitar sounds like it's been recorded in a really bare, open room. Same with his vocals. So there's that prosody of space, but also the delicacy of hearing like a bit of water or air move in the back of someone's throat, or that guitar finger slipping just enough to make it feel real, or him going, you know, laughing and adding his thing. Those are the things that kind of like this, you click, bring someone's attention back to the song. And it's like you tell people that you know that they are listening when you write like that. And that could probably be a through line to all of these songs today, unless I'm wrong, is that they're empathetically written, different styles, different places in life and different aspects of their goals, but really cool. And it doesn't really hit me until later, but when I get the emails or when I get to do stuff like this with Emily, I just realize there are people that are loving this and they're not trying to win any kind of races. They're just fighting against themselves and trying to express those things that are really difficult and turning that sadness or heavy weight into something beautiful that can be shared and can, yes, drive your career if you want to be an idiot and try and do that. But it's just beautiful to hear it. And it's very humbling for me to realize that people are writing songs for the love of it. And I have a show about it and it's supposed to be my job, but that's the aspirations. But definitely people that are loving it more than me and writing more than me. Just props. There has to be something, you know, that will drive me to do my best and get back in the seat, which I have. So thank you guys. Thank you, Emily, as well, for coming and very much pushing me off my roost, which is needed.
Yeah. Thanks for having me again.
But we can't finish like that.
What do you do to prepare for a writing session, rehearsal, and any sort of collaborative group practice so you can be present and on?
It's something I try to do, which isn't necessarily done in some of the circles where you write in a camp or you write 2-3 songs in a day, or particularly when I'm at Rainbowwood in Bath, I will do my best to meet someone at least once and have lunch outside of a studio context before I write with them, especially if I don't know them, because I feel like there can be all positives. It's not just about that kind of nervous few couple of minutes when you meet someone and like, oh, hey, do you want a tea? Or hey, the studio's up here. Those nervous things that we do when we're hosting even, you know, you have your friends for dinner and it's like, okay, I'll get the coats. There's that sense of that when we welcome someone to the studio, when I meet someone, but I go out of the way to try and find them and just see them in their environment, maybe go and see a show. And it sounds like a lot of an investment, to be honest, but sometimes that can be how you stand out and how someone can know that you care before they get into a session. Because if they're artists, they're coming to you because they have a project, they have something they want to work on. So it'd be a combination of getting in touch with them and trying to understand them, not going in and saying, how do I do what I want to do today? I think I've definitely done that wrong and I was kind of late to starting in songwriting, but I've done my best to clear the plate. And when I meet someone, not only do you go and buy that first lunch or coffee, go and find them. It really means a lot to people, or you take the time to allow them to just be. There's a couple other examples, I think, but simply take the time to get to know someone and they'll understand that you're there for the betterment of their project, which does affect you. No one's stupid. Of course, everyone's in it for what they want from it, but that'll be one thing. And then I think maybe that's my first one. What about you, Emily? What would you say?
Yeah, I like that. I feel like that's something that I do more and more in my sessions, whether I'm writing or recording, is just debrief ahead of time. Make sure everybody's on the same page mentally and emotionally is super good. In addition to that, the thing that I like to emphasize the most, let's say I don't have a lot of time and I need to prioritize my favorite warm-ups or my better warm-ups, usually what I'll end up doing is something relating to breathing. Like I'll be doing breathing exercises, or even just a quick jolt of cardio too is good. I feel like sometimes getting your body oxygenated is even more important than doing any kind of like vocal warm up. And that sometimes I can surprise myself with how well I can perform if I'm just, you know, like I said, your heart rate's up, you have more oxygen in your blood. That's one way to get a really good performance.
I would definitely back that up. I think that's what you were saying about even what happens before someone comes into the room. So Ed and I are waiting in the studio. and someone's on the way, I've had to just sit down and sketch sometimes because I just overthink, and overthink meaning everything is ready. Everything's ready for the session. Nothing needs to be done. Yeah, the teas are there. The glasses are perfectly placed. It's just enough. Sit down, like Emily's saying, and maybe do a couple of press ups and have a laugh, because that energy will then come across. And even if you look at psychological studies, they did an interesting study where they had people go for an interview. So it was a kind of marked set of questions. And that job interview was in two groups. The first group had to sit deliberately in a stress position. So kind of hunched over, crouched, whereby your body produces more stress hormones. And the others were told to stand in a what's to be proven positive position. Like Emily's saying, where it's oxygenated, you stood up. It's kind of that monkey science of how I stand is how I feel. And they found that, you know, the job interviews went better for those in those positions of positivity. So even breathing is so important, stretching, and we're always crouched forward. Everything is bent forward. Our necks are going forward. Even now we're sitting. The other day I did the whole like Elliot Hulse, have you ever seen him, like starfish thing? You kind of try and lean back as far as you can and open up your body. And these things can be funny. And even another example is, my mum always loved to use this one. She's a great therapist, but she talks about how when a zebra is being chased by a lion, stick with me, if it escapes, it will need to get rid of that stress. Because often what we do as humans, flick our phones or sit down in a corner, but that zebra will shake, dance, run to physically rid itself of that stress hormone. So this is a lesson I need to learn, but that's a great point. And I think prepare, debrief. And the best thing you could do to prepare for a session is probably have something that you really care about to also offer and mix into their broth of what they want to write about. Have a few choice lines or be good at... Actually, this is perfect. Emily, the two types of empathy, what are they?
Awesome. The first one is affective empathy, and the second one is cognitive empathy. And those are two very different things that everyone experiences degrees of. Affective empathy is when you see someone, for example, and they're experiencing an emotion, let's say a more intense emotion like crying, that impulse that you have to comfort them without them having to say a word to you, like, hey, I'm distressed, is effective empathy. If you're the type of person where you see someone distressed and you instantly want to give them a hug, that means that you're probably higher in terms of effective empathy. In addition, we have cognitive empathy, which is, for example, let's say you're reading a book and you can relate a lot to the main character and that moves you to tears. That would be the example of cognitive empathy, when you can recognize based on like what somebody is saying more so, like, and you can relate it to your own situation and then therefore derive something from that. That's more of cognitive empathy. And everybody, like I said, experiences both kind of interchangeably and different degrees of it too. And they're different. I've noticed, in addition to these two different types of empathy being really common just in my day-to-day life, I notice it comes up a lot in songwriting. And some songwriters are stronger at really hitting me in the cognition, whereas other songwriters will give me like the chills all over my body. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, by the way, for that knowledge bomb. Because those two things are directly related to songwriting as well. And as Emily said wonderfully, I was going to go into that. That's what triggered me to ask you that question, because you shared that with me on a session a few weeks ago. But something I would also say, bearing in mind going into sessions with people and that preparation, is being able to let them dictate what the feeling is for the song. It's very easiest for us, and me particularly, to hear the first thing they say and then go, oh yeah, I know that. It's like, no, you don't. And I like to think of it as like stepping down or drilling down to a shared experience. So you take the time to ask someone in that kind of effective empathy sense of like, well, where might they be? And then go, okay, let's build from there. And then you ask those questions that are open questions that allow them to lead themselves to what's called a shared experience, whereby it hit on something that we can all understand. We all have our specific examples of. So we talked about that on a full length, but that is being effectively empathetic is really important in songwriting. And cognitive empathy, like you said, is when someone can be reached through songwriting. And also books, yeah. I cry through books. And I think that's a good thing. Being sensitive is really important in my mind. So that's three things, right? Buy people lunch. Get ready for that investment of doing so. Reaching out to someone. You might surprise people. They might be a bit caught off because it's not normal to go, hey, it'd be really cool to hang out before we write so I get a better sense of who you are and I can do a better job as a writer. And then Emily's physical preparations are absolutely spot on as well. Links to the anxieties I've had. And then understanding the two types of empathy, but mainly knowing the kind of questions to ask and related to those preparations, being in a state where they want to share with you. And that requires kind of holding ground. It's called the ministry of presence. I really like it, is that you can, just by being there, you invite people to want to share their journey, share their songs. It's also important that regardless of the outcome of the session, if people feel like they've been heard and you had a great experience writing with you, not a great result, then they want to come back and they'll feel like they want to invest in the projects. Could probably be another episode, to be honest, talking about preparation for songwriting sessions. But was that Andy you said? Thank you for that question. That's awesome.
Thanks, Andy. Yes, like you're saying, I feel like I could, in addition to saying this is my most essential warm-up, go into a lot more detail in terms of the conditioning that I actually like to do for my voice. And if you have any questions about that, feel free to message us, email us. Willing to go more in depth. And like you said, this could be an entire other episode.
100%. And also, if you're interested in speaking to Emily, working with Emily, you can get in touch with her, book a call. Likewise for myself, but as you can hear, Emily's the rising star. So get involved. And I think she brings a really, really interesting and psychological approach to songwriting. And it's a very rich experience working with you. So yeah, get in touch with Emily. And questions can come in any way. Like you said, if you want to throw it on Insta, if you want to send us a post, a comment. But I really do love you guys also that send in your private emails, and they send in things that are never going to be read out on the show, but they're equally as special. I think we're in a world where if it's not online, it didn't happen. But I think fuck that shit. I'm really, really touched. Cognitive empathy. Yeah, right. When I read an email from one of you guys, and it does really, really move me. And I do my best to try and mirror that in my writing, but it's never great. So yeah, thank you guys so much. It does mean a lot. And I hope I can always just chat to people and tell them that. Very, very important. Emily, close the show. Close the show. Do it. Do that finale. Tell us what you're up to. Woo. And then close the show.
What am I up to? I am writing songs. I'm actually, what I'm going to be doing right now, today, after this, is getting together a short set list of songs that I can play at open mics. And I have an opportunity to play a few songs out at a gallery in the near future in my hometown. We are building a set list. And if anybody has questions about that, I'm also willing to answer those. And my first 30 minutes are free if you want one-on-one coaching too. So take advantage of that. And happy writing. Keep doing it. Love to see it.
Happy writing from a girl in Colorado. As Dylan Martinson said, we're going to go from blah, 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 bye.
Peace.
Hello there, sweet listener. Thank you for listening to today's show. And I just wanted to say, we do have an Instagram. I know that some of you guys are quite interested in just sending those private emails, and I promise you they are absolute gold dust to me. And I love receiving those emails when people get time to send them with their songs, with their questions. And mainly, I love your stories about how you're listening to the show, where you found it, what it means to you. Those are the things I'll probably take to my grave, to be completely honest. But if you want to be out there on social media, please get in touch. I wish I knew that pod on Instagram. We're going to be getting stuff up on YouTube as well. Reach out. Send me a DM. Send me a voice note. Send me a video. I want to see you guys. I want to see your shows. I want to hear your songs. Thank you again for listening to the show. If you want to be involved and get full value for your creative process, please do so. But if you're one of those wonderful people that just likes to sit and observe, I know you're out there, and thank you so much for your attention. It really does mean a lot. So no need to get in touch, but if you feel like you want to be involved, please do so. Much love and bye-bye.